today.
Are you tired of living with stained and worn-out carpeting? Does the den look like bears spent the winter with you? Spring is here, and so is Empire Today's half-off your project sale, starting now, but only for a limited time. Save 50% on a huge selection of carpet, hardwood, and laminate, standard padding and materials, and basic installation. Call the Empire Today half-off your project sale hotline now.
1-855-385-0681.
Empire Today's free in-home estimates are easy and smart. Choose from high-quality flooring in the rooms where you'll use them, with your lighting, so you can see the color best. We'll do the measuring. You do the selecting and saving. But first, you must do the calling. Everyone loves the half-off your project sale. Even bears. Call the Empire Today special hotline.
1-855-385-0681. 1-855-385-0681.
Empire
Today. Select styles. Details at empiretoday.com.
Blog Talk Radio.
Listen. Hello? We go out, we hit people in the mouth.
You play to win the game.
Next fan up.
I want winners.
Featuring Pod Vader and the super fans.
They are who we thought they were.
Hey guys, it is April 14th, 2015. This is Andrew Hirsch. I am the New York Jets super fan. Today we are going to talk about the AFC East. I know you guys probably feel like we talk about this division all the time because Jay usually hosts these podcasts, but I promise it won't be a Patriots Today podcast. We're going to try to focus on the rest of the AFC East as well as the Patriots. And with me, I have the Patriots superfan, Patrick.
Yes, and I make promises you can't keep, Andrew. I'm going to talk about the Patriots all day.
Yeah, I mean, I'm gonna try to keep it here, but maybe our the third person on the line will be the arbiter. We have Dave, Dolphin Dave, to represent the Miami Dolphins. What's going on, Dave?
How's it going? We'll try to keep Patrick reined in.
Yeah, I heard Patrick. You should guys go check out our last podcast that ran on Saturday, where Patrick was a little unhinged when talking about Spygate and all the allegations that just seem to pop up with his team. I mean, we all know the Patriots are just play by the rules all the time, and there's that saying where there's smoke, there's fire. Like, it definitely does not apply when it comes to the New England Patriots.
Well, not when people are doing nothing but blowing smoke, it doesn't.
Well, so before we start, I'm just gonna say how you can reach us. You can reach us on Twitter at NFU Podcast. That is at NFU Podcast. To email us at nextfanup@gmail.com. And we're also on the Facebook. Facebook.com/NFU Podcast. Did I date myself by saying the Facebook?
It's just Facebook. That's cooler.
So you know what's cool? $1 billion.
But yeah, that's right. Yeah, speaking of $1 billion, how about the spending from the Dolphins this year?
Right. So that's what I'm going to get into. There was a lot of money spent in this division this year. A lot of money. Everyone trying to catch up to the Patriots, who are sitting on their throne, looking down at the rest of us with their fourth Super Bowl championship since, 2001? Their fourth title since 2001. While the rest of us are just here trying to make the playoffs. So, Patrick, You look around the division. Is there a team out of the three teams that you look at and say, that team, I'm a little worried about that team? Or are you just saying, forget it. We're gonna go 12-4 again. We're gonna make the playoffs, and we're gonna be the representative of the AFC East.
So I worry about every team in the AFC East. People point to the combined records of the teams in the division, and they say, oh, the AFC East is so bad, it's so bad, it's so bad. Well, no, the Patriots just hang a couple of losses on you guys every year, which makes your record look bad by comparison. But those are never easy wins. You know, they're a lot like the Patriots Super Bowl wins, where we just barely hang on and win at the end, and we do it through, you know, game planning and coaching and, you know, jumping on fumbles and, you know, the little things. You know, and frankly, we are usually the deepest team at the end of the year after every team's gotten, you know, a couple of starters banged up. We still have guys coming in off the bench that can play, you know, which really helps you out in November, December, January, you know, some cases February. You know, and that's why ultimately we end up with the best record and, you know, going deep into the playoffs usually. But it's never an easy road. Like, this division is not a cakewalk.
I mean, some people would disagree with you, but it's interesting that you bring up that you guys always had the deepest roster when it comes to the end of the year after every team has injuries. Well, I'm looking at the Patriots roster right now, and it doesn't seem mm-hmm. to be, like, in the greatest of shape. Is there are you concerned that maybe this is the year that it all comes crashing down?
I mean, I'm a New England sports fan. That's been, like, my fear every year that I've been alive for every team that plays. I look at the roster at the start of the year, and I say, oh, no. And I look at the drafts and the way they shake out, and I say, oh, no. And, you know, come week three or four, all the wrinkles seem to be ironed out. The receivers seem to be running the right routes. Defensive backs, they're consistent anyway. You know, but the team is clicking, and they're winning the way they're designed to win, which is, at least on defense, you know, let the team move down the field, you know, make them string together 10, 12 plays to score, and a mediocre quarterback isn't going to be able to do that consistently, so we'll get the ball back. And then on offense, we do the exact opposite. We have Tom Brady go on 12 play scoring drives and put it together and put points on the board reasonably consistently. We don't turn it over very often. We don't punt very often. And that's how we end up winning games, you know, by 3 points, by 10 points, just by being more stable than the competition. And yeah, a lot of that has to do with quality depth versus, you know, elite starters. We don't have a lot of those. We usually have 3 or 4 top quality guys, and then everybody else is a B minus. And then the C plus players coming in off the bench is better than other teams' D minus players coming in off the bench. And that's where we end up winning.
Right. So it sort of seems like the Patriots realize that football, it's a very cliche thing to say, but it's like, it's a game of inches, game of bounces. Like, there's a lot of luck based with it. What you have to try to do is try to get yourself to that point where if you get those bounces, you are going to win. And to do that, you can't turn the ball over, and you have to maximize every possession that you have. And you have a guy like Tom Brady, it's an easy thing to do. So I'm looking around the division, and I still see only one team with a legitimate quarterback in this division. The Jets and Bills don't have quarterbacks that you could rely on. And Ryan Tannehill, Dave, I've been a fan of his since college. Big reason why, because he only played one season in college, and to me that means he has a lot of room to grow. What have you seen from Tannehill? Do you think he can be your guy? And with his contract running up, do you think the Dolphins are going to pay him? Do you think they should pay him?
Yes, I do. And actually, there's been multiple reports that the Dolphins do want to give him that long term contract before the season, but they also have the fifth year option available to them. It's $16 million to keep him for the fifth year. I fully expect them to give him the long-term contract. The one thing that concerns me, like you guys were talking about, is all this money tied up between Sue, and then just a couple days ago, Mike Pouncey got his contract, and now we're going to have to pay Ryan Tannehill. That's three guys taking up a huge, huge portion of our cap space.
Yeah, well, you guys hired Mike Tannenbaum to run your personnel department and be your football czar this offseason. He was the Jets general manager for years, and what he did was his philosophy is that he always went for it. He made the big trades, he made the big moves, went after Santonio Holmes, went after Antonio Cromartie, spent a lot in free agency, and he took a rookie quarterback in Sanchez, and they made two AFC title games. But the problem is when he left the team in shambles cap space wise because he went for it. It was a very it's not It's very different from what the Patriots do in that they try to not overextend themselves by giving out big contracts. Like, they'd rather get rid of a guy 1 year too early than 1 year too late. Like, you look at, like, Vince Wilfork. That's a guy they got rid of.
Yeah, I was going to say, the funny thing about the Patriots and cap space and big contracts is, you know, the Patriots, the last couple of years, they've been pretty tight up against the cap, right? It's one of the reasons why they haven't really been able to go out and make a big splash in free agency. Not that that's their style typically anyway, but they couldn't really do it this year. You know, people give them a lot of flack for not making a stronger push for Darrelle Revis. Well, there was nothing they could do to keep him. Like, they just didn't have any money in the bank. Yet, on the flip side of that, they're also one of the teams that's actually looking at not spending against the minimum that's required under the new collective bargaining agreement. They're going to get hit with a penalty, most likely, for not spending enough cash over the three-year stretch. And, you know, you say to yourself, how is that possible? How can they be so tied up against the cap but not have spent any actual money? And the answer is sitting in a jail cell right now, going on trial for murder. It's Aaron Hernandez. You know, they gave him, right before he got, you know, arrested on multiple counts of murder, they gave him a big contract extension to try and push money up forward, so that they wouldn't be in this position with not spending enough, you know, juggling their cash around. And because he's in jail, they're not actually paying him, but his number doesn't come off the book, right? So it's like the worst situation possible in terms of dead money. Like, they wrote a massive check and, like, signed up for multiple years of big money for a guy that's just, like, almost certainly never going to play for them or anybody else ever again. No one really has broken that down yet, but, like it dawned on me, you know, a couple of weeks ago, and I'm like, wait a minute. How are they in trouble for not spending any money when they don't have any cap space? Where's this money going? And then I just smack myself in the head. I'm like, oh, my God, it's with Aaron Hernandez. He's killing them. Bad pun. But, like, he's causing damage to the cap.
Dave, so the point I was making before Patrick told us about – and first of all, Patrick, the thing I want to see when it comes to the Hernandez thing, just get past it, fine. I just want to see Bill Belichick on the witness stand.
God, that's the most boring TV ever.
That would be great television. I would not look away. Just to, like, the look on his face while the lawyer is interrogating him. Oh, it would be.
I heard somebody say they want to see him show up in a suit coat with the sleeves cut off.
is there a dress code in court? I don't even know. He could just show up however he wants.
I have to admit, I'd watch that.
I would do, as awful as it would be. Like, you know, I would be rubbernecking for that one.
Well, we're on to Cincinnati.
It would just be a ton of that. We're on to the next question. We're not talking about Aaron Hernandez anymore. What I was saying before about the Dolphins, Dave, are you concerned that Tannenbaum is, I'd like to say the word overextending himself, in that he's only opening up his window for 1 or 2 years. And after these 2 years, you guys are going to be in cap hell. So are you concerned that he's opening up this window while Tom Brady is still on the Patriots and not sort of having a slow build and to try to make his team more competitive in the future?
Yeah, absolutely. Like I was saying, a huge part of our payroll is going, if Tannehill gets signed, a huge part is going to just three guys on our roster. So that is a concern. I understand they've kind of worked out Sue's contract to take a small hit this year, and then it balloons up to like $28 million in 2016. So I guess there are things they can do to move money around. When the whole Charles Clay thing was going on, whether or not he would get signed by the Bills or the Dolphins or what was going to happen, there was talk that the Dolphins could match whatever they offered just by moving that money around, but obviously that didn't happen. So I don't know. I'm not a capologist, so I don't really know how it works, but I think that is a concern for a lot of Dolphins fans.
But what Tannenbaum did with the Jets, it's funny, because if the Jets win two games, he's a genius. Two more games, he's a genius. Because what he did was, it's sort of what they the Seahawks did in that they loaded up the rest of their roster and they ran with a young quarterback. The problem is the Seahawks' young quarterback was Russell Wilson, who they took in the third round, who they were paying $500,000, while the Jets invested a first-round pick plus more because they traded up from 17 to 5 to take Mark Sanchez. And it ended up, we all know how that ended up, and I don't need to remind myself, even though it did involve, sadly, my highlight as a Jet fan during my lifetime, during that divisional playoff game against Patriots. Pat, you remember that game?
Are you talking about the butt fumble game?
You know I'm not talking about the butt fumble game.
Why aren't you talking about the butt fumble game, man? That's what everybody thinks of when you mention Mark Sanchez.
Yeah. I don't know. I'm just happy that he's on the Eagles. And the thing that made me so happy was last year when he came in to Chip Kelly and he had one good game and everyone was singing his praises. Oh, Chip Kelly, he's gonna fix Mark Sanchez. The guy just can't stop turning the ball over. And I don't even know why I'm talking about him right now. This is the AFC East. We're not talking about Mark Sanchez anymore. What we are going to be talking about is the Buffalo Bills. As you guys notice, we don't have a Bills superfan right now. We would like to have a Bills superfan. So if there are any Buffalo Bills fans out there, you can email us at nextfanup@gmail.com or connect us on hit us up on Twitter at NFU Podcast. But I look at what the Bills did this offseason, and it's very interesting because they're sort of built the way the 2010 Jets are built. Their defense is unbelievable talent-wise, and they picked up Rex Ryan to run that defense. The problem is they got Patrick's boy, Matt Castle, playing quarterback along with EJ Manuel. So if I had to pick a team in the division to rival the Patriots, I'd pick I don't know about you guys.
I honestly would too, and my boy Matt Castle, as you mentioned, I mean, for a guy that got occasional playing time as a tight end to get drafted as a quarterback and go on to start, and have a career in the NFL is pretty impressive. And him winning 11 games for the Patriots when he was filling in for Tom Brady after his knee got blown out, that was very impressive. So I think they could have done a whole lot worse than Matt Castle as their bridge quarterback. I mean, that implies that they have somebody on the other end, I suppose, which they don't. But I am concerned about the Buffalo Bills. They have elite starting talent on both sides of the ball. I don't know what their depth looks like. I imagine it's decent. So Rex is a really good coach. So I am a lot more concerned about the Bills this year than I have been in the last 10 years.
Right. The problem is that they can't find a quarterback because they traded up and took Sammy Watkins last year. But they're an overall very talented roster they got going on. And as you said, Rex, I'm a Jets fan, and Rex Ryan is my favorite coach of my lifetime. As much as all the bravado, all the press conferences. Like, I think it gets overlooked how good a coach this guy is. Because he has his faults. Yes, he doesn't run the offense. But there are a lot of coaches who run one side of the ball and have a coordinator run the other side. The problem is the Jets never had that coordinator, that Brian Schottenheimer, that Tony Sparano, that Marty Morningweg. So he never had an offensive coordinator to supplement what he brings to the defensive side of the ball. And their offensive coordinator now is Greg Roman, the guy who ran those 49ers offenses. I mean, I don't know how you guys feel about him, but they got a lot of weapons on offense. They have Sammy Watkins, Robert Woods, Percy Harvin. They picked up LeSean McCoy, and they picked up Charles Clay. So they have guys to throw the ball to. The problem is they don't have a quarterback, and that's my team's problem as well, and it seems to be half the league's problem. But still, if I had to pick a team right now before the draft, because who knows what's going to happen in the draft, I would pick Buffalo. Dave, do you disagree with us? Do you feel like the Dolphins because they're the only team besides the Patriots in our division who have a quarterback? Do you feel that we are selling your team short?
Yeah, I think that is the difference for me. It always starts up front. In the trenches, I'm not that familiar with their roster, so I wonder what their O-line is like.
Yeah, they have their left tackle is Cordy Glenn, who's a good player, and Eric Wood at center is a good player, but they, besides that, I mean, they picked up they picked up Richie Incognito to play right guard. So you could see how desperate they are to find some offensive line talent. Their offensive line isn't anything to write home about.
Yeah, so that would be, if I were a Bills fan, I would be concerned. I mean, if you've already lacking at talent at the quarterback position, plus you don't have the guys up front to protect the guy, that would worry me a lot. But of course, I can't say the same for the Dolphins. We've got big holes at guard as well. Tannehill's been the most sacked quarterback over the past 2 years. You know, we've got holes ourselves.
And you're talking about Tannehill. Let's go back to Tannehill for a second, because as I said, I really like him a lot. But the thing that stands out with him is it's just his complete inability to hit the deep ball. Like watching Dolphin games last year, the amount of times Mike Wallace had someone beat deep that and he got overthrown, like it was just unbelievable. Do you think that's something that can be taught, or do you think he's going to be have a career like Alex Smith where he's mobile, he can get the short pass, he can move the ball up and down the field, but the defenses never have to worry about being hit over the top?
Well, if you look at some of the moves that they made, like trading away Mike Wallace, picking up, trading for Kenny Stills. Kenny Stills, from what I understand, fits into what Tannehill can do better than Wallace could. He's a better route runner. He can run those inside patterns that Tannehill excels at. As far as the deep ball, you know, there were times when he hit guys on target and they just dropped it. So I understand what people are saying about the deep ball. It never happens. And it's true. I mean, the numbers bear that out. I don't know. I think he has it in him. He's shown he can do it. The thing is, it's just not a consistent thing with him.
I think he can win a lot of Super Bowls without throwing a good deep ball.
Yeah.
I mean, you look at what the Patriots have been doing. I mean, they have Brady. But the thing that's crazy about the Patriots is that, like, everybody knows what they're doing on offense, yet they still can't stop it. Like, they're not – like, you look at Brady the last couple of years, the dirty little secret is that he can't hit a deep ball either. So
that's right.
I mean, so I don't know what's going on there, but they find a way to win Super Bowls. So, I mean, maybe you're right. Maybe they can win – the Dolphins can win a Super Bowl not without having that threat. But you were talking about Kenny Stills. Kenny Stills is actually one of the best deep receivers in football last year, which is why it was interesting that they went and picked him up. But I like him in general as a player, and I thought I just didn't understand why the Saints got rid of him. I mean, if you listen to one of our past podcasts with Chase, our Saints super fan, trying to name his receivers, like he was naming like practice squatters, and yet they're giving up Kenny Stills. So I don't know. Maybe there's something going on in the locker room there, because there were reports that Drew Brees wasn't a big fan of Kenny Stills. So maybe that was the reason. But if I had to pick an under the radar move for a team that I really liked, I would pick Kenny Stills. And I just think that he's 22 years old, and
yeah.
he's about to start his third year in the league. And you gave up, I believe, a third-round pick for him. I think that,
yeah.
That's a great move. Do you guys have any under-the-radar moves that you really liked that maybe have not gotten as much coverage as you think they should have?
Well, honestly, we already talked about it, but for me, it's bringing Matt Cassel into the Bills. They now have it, and I know there are certainly probably 25 better quarterbacks in the league, but I don't know if there are 32 better quarterbacks in the league. So they just got themselves a starting quarterback on a team that was stacked everywhere else, where that was the missing ingredient. You know, I joked about the first couple of big moves that it really, you know, didn't do anything. It was lipstick on a pig. But when they got a guy in the center that can complete a pass or two, now all of a sudden I'm a little bit more concerned. And they didn't break the bank to do it. There was nobody on the horizon that they were going to get that was better, it being in the draft or in free agency. You know, so they gave themselves almost instant legitimacy by picking up a guy that, you know, he's not going to go to the Pro Bowl next year, but I'm sure he can hit Sammy Watkins.
Right. It's interesting you say Matt Cassel, because the Jets picked up a guy in Ryan Fitzpatrick that I would argue mm-hmm. is a better quarterback than Matt Castle. I mean, the Bills used to have him, but is there, if you had to choose one of them, would you choose Castle or Fitzpatrick? Sounds like you choose Castle.
I'd choose Castle. I mean, I love Ryan Fitzpatrick. I met him once in an elevator, right before the draft. I was living in Boston, and I look over and there's a guy holding a box, and I'm like, "Are you Ryan Fitzpatrick?" And he's helping his neighbor move. Like, they're Harvard students. They had no idea what football was. They were international students at that. And they're like, "How do you know this guy?" And I'm like, "He's got a 48 on his Wonderlic. This dude's getting drafted." So I've always had a soft spot in my heart for smart guys who can play football. But, I mean, he doesn't play that smart. He doesn't play like he went to Harvard. He just likes to uncork it and see where it'll go. And he's kind of like the antithesis to Tom Brady, where Brady will methodically move down the field 7 yards at a time and be happy with it. You know, ultimately kick a field goal and be a little bit upset that he didn't come away with six, but not that upset. And Fitzpatrick is he wants to throw it 40 yards and hopefully his guy comes down with it. You know, it's like he's almost a punter out there.
Well, you say that like he likes to throw the ball up there and hope his receivers make a play. Well,
mm-hmm.
I look at the Jets roster and their receivers are Brandon Marshall, who I believe is 6'4", Eric Decker, who's 6'3", and Jay Samaro as a tight end, who's 6'5". So I mm-hmm. think he's a good fit for what the Jets want to do. But you're not going anywhere with Ryan Fitzpatrick as your starting quarterback.
But I'll make the same argument that I just made for Castle. Who are you going to get that's better? Like, I don't think you're going right. to get anybody better than him that's available. Are there 31 guys that could play better than him? Probably, but not 35. You know, like, so he's a legitimate, like, really, really low-level starter, maybe a fringe backup. But he's better than anybody on your roster, and he's better than anybody else that you had the opportunity to get this year. So he's still a good pickup, right? Like, I don't think he's going to go out there and embarrass your team. Like, I'm not making that argument at all.
Actually, there were a lot of Dolphins fans that were worried that either the Jets or the Bills would pick up Matt Moore. He was a free agent this offseason.
Are there any other under-the-radar players, under-the-radar moves that you guys look at and you think that he will make an impact this year? Because I have one, but if you guys have one, I'd like to hear from you guys first.
Well, you kind of stole my thunder with the Kenny Stills one. That hasn't been talked about a whole lot. They cut a big salary when they let Wallace go, and Kenny Stills is scheduled to make like $600,000 this year. So that would have been mine. One thing that the Dolphins, a lot of people question, they didn't. When they got Sue, they let Bodrick go and Starks. The interesting thing to me is that's the move they didn't make that I think is kind of not talked about, because they had this guy Earl Mitchell that they picked up a few years ago from the Texans, I believe.
Correct.
I think he fits right in there. And when the Dolphins made that move, I think it was Brian Baldinger that brought it up and called that out as a underrated move at the time.
So I agree with that. The thing is, after Sue and Mitchell, they don't really have much in the interior defensive line, so that's probably an area where they're going to go look at the draft. But a guy that I look at that's under the radar and that I really liked was the Dolphins picking up Jordan Cameron, because that guy is a really, really good football player when it comes to catching the football, making plays down the field. And, I mean, he's been stuck in quarterback purgatory in Cleveland these past couple of years. But, I mean, I when he had Brandon Weeden there, he was playing great. And Tannehill is definitely an upgrade on him. And I just think he's another target to throw to. I think he's a better player than Charles Clay, the guy who got paid a ton of money.
Yeah.
So what do you think about Jordan Cameron, Div?
Yeah, without question, I think he's better than Charles Clay. It's just so scary with his concussion history. I think he's had, two or three?
Yeah.
So that's that's a big concern of mine is just the injury history. We do have Deion Sims, who has shown some flashes. He's more of an inline guy, so he's a nice complement to Jordan Cameron.
Right. The thing about Jordan Cameron is when you talk about the concussions, he didn't play football. He played very little football in college. He was a basketball player, so you could say he doesn't have as many miles, but he also doesn't have as much experience like taking these hits. Like the rest of these players, so maybe he's more susceptible, and I don't believe they gave him a big contract, so I don't think they're really committed to him. But we were just talking about Charles Clay, and I think this will he's going to be one of the answers. He's going to be one of the answers to this question that I have. What do you think was the worst move of the offseason by any team in the division? I think Dave. You're probably going to say Charles Clay, right?
Yeah, I loved Charles Clay. He was a sixth-round pick and just worked his tail off. But, oh, man, that was a lot of money for him. And I'm glad the Dolphins didn't try to match it, even though they could have. People question why they didn't franchise tag him. I don't think I would have agreed with that move if they had done that. Yeah, we'll miss him for sure. They got a really good player in Charles Clay, but I just can't see he got what?
5 years, $38 million, $20 million guaranteed.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, that's close to the Pouncey contract.
He's going to get paid more than Jimmy Graham these next 2 years, so
yeah,
he's got to produce.
Yeah, and we picked up Jordan Cameron it's a 2-year contract, but only $5 million is guaranteed. I think they can cut him after the first year if it doesn't work out.
See, Dave, not all is lost when it comes to your salary cap. You've made some some
yeah, they seem to know how to move the money around. People were first talking about the Sue move. It was pretty widely recognized that they just couldn't afford it, but they worked it out. They did some creative things with the cap, and he's a Dolphin now.
Patrick, is there a move that you look at and you say, I don't understand what that team is thinking, I don't understand why they gave them that much money, or even a move a team didn't make that you think they should have made and like bringing the guy back?
Well, you know, I'm always dubious on the amount of money that's given out. You know, because even when people start talking about guaranteed money, I think they bucket a lot of things together, you know, and call it guaranteed when there are no real guarantees attached to it. You know, they usually come in roster bonuses and, you know, every other such thing. Like, the big one here that people couldn't stop talking about was Darrelle Revis going. And like I said earlier, like the writing was on the wall. Like, you just had to look at the Patriots cap and what was owed to Revis to keep him for a year, which everybody said they should just do, like, quote unquote. And it wasn't going to be possible. Like, it wasn't going to be possible at all. I had a theory that what they might have done with Revis, and I guess they had the authority to do it, would have been to trade him because he was under contract with the Patriots, and he did actually, you know, have a relatively low salary because most of the money that he was owed on his second contract or in the second year of his contract was in the form of a roster bonus. He had like something crazy, like a $16 million roster bonus. You know, I might be wrong on that number, but it's somewhere in that neighborhood. And, you know, something like $7 million in salary. And, you know, if I'm on the phone with the New York Jets or the Oakland Raiders or anybody else, and I say, I've got Darrelle Revis for you for 1 year for $7 million, and you don't have to pick up that roster bonus, you know, that just goes away. You know, what are you going to give me for that? You know, I guarantee you it's going to be something. So I thought that they could have, had they chosen to just completely screw over a player for no good reason and done like irreparable harm to their reputation with other free agents, they could have moved Revis and actually gotten something for him instead of just cutting him, taking a $5 million dead money hit for the money that they move forward to this year, and watched him sign with exactly who they didn't want him to sign with. right? Like, I think they could have controlled that situation a bit differently. It would have made it interesting anyway.
Well, I don't know if you know this, Patrick, but the Patriots sort of gamed the system in that they're going to get a compensatory pick for Revis because they didn't technically cut him. They didn't technically cut him. He declined his option, right? So they're gonna get a third round pick most likely. So I think that's a very smart maneuvering job at the Patriots that it's gonna come next year.
They do it every year. I mean, we have a third round compensatory pick this year because we let Aqib Talib go in pretty much the exact same way. And we replace him with Darrell Revis, who had been cut, right? So he doesn't count as a free agent for whatever stupid reason it is. I don't know. Like, that whole system seems kind of broken to me. But you're right. The Patriots do what the Patriots do, and they look at how the rules are structured, and they say, how do we maximize our opportunity, within a framework while going after these individual players? And that's what they did, right? They lost a really good cornerback, and they replaced him with a Hall of Fame cornerback. And got a compensatory pick out of the process. Like, that's a pretty good day of work right there.
I hear that. The thing with the Patriots, though, is that they're going to have to replace him. I mean, they replaced Talib with Revis, but free agency is basically done. There's no one really out there to pick up. And Bill Belichick, I mean, as much as he gets praised for his ability to draft players, he has, I just have to throw names out there, like Rozai Dowling or Darius Butler or Tavon Wilson or even like Patrick
Terrence Wheatley, or like the list goes on and on and on and on and on. They have,
right.
The only cornerback that Belichick drafted that he didn't move to safety within a year that was any good was Asante Samuel in the fourth round. Like, every other cornerback, and there's a list as long as my arm, has followed the same pattern. It's come in, play significantly as a rookie. Everybody gets excited about their potential. They take a step back in year two. Then they take a massive step back in year three, and then they're cut in year four. And it's ridiculous how consistent that is. So, yeah, replacing Revis, one, spending that kind of money on a free agent, I was actually okay with, even though it defies Patriots philosophies, because they've just demonstrated over the course of the past 12 years that they cannot, draft and train a guy to play in that position. So, okay, go out and get one that can and pay a premium for him and pay him like he's a quarterback. Fine. All right? I think that's acceptable. But now that he's done, what do? I mean, I said it on the podcast over the weekend. You invest some resources at strong safety because you're going to need a guy that can play over the top. It's going to be like it was 2 years ago and the 4 years before that, where I don't care what your name is. Your name could be Mark Sanchez, and you're going to throw for 400 yards on the Patriots.
Right. And it's going to be fun. Cause I know Patrick Chung had a good year last year, but that was because he had good corners. It's going to be fun watching him, people running by him and just into the end zone. But what I do like what the Patriots did in some respect is that what people always say is that they get weak in one spot and they supplement at another spot. And I know we moved past an under-the-radar signings, but the signing of Jabal Sheard, I really, really like that move. I don't think he was used correctly in Cleveland, and he still was very productive on the pass rush. And I still believe they gave him a two-year, $11 million contract. So do you think that's what the Patriots are doing, that they're just trying to supplement their bad secondary with picking up guys in the front seven? Or do you think Belichick saw value there and decided to pounce?
I think it's the latter because I don't think Sheard's going to start. Like, he might be he's probably going to be a rotational guy because who are you taking off the field, in place of him? I don't think you're going to take off Ninkovich, which is probably where he would go. He's a depth guy, and he's a value pick, and he might be one of those guys that we have that, I think is going to start, it's going to get hurt. So we're going to be pretty grateful to have a guy that can come in and play.
I definitely agree with that. The thing is that, what it allows them to do, it allows them to go multiple, it allows them to play the 4-3, the 3-4. They have the personnel. Like, Chandler Jones could play both. Rob Ninkovich could play both. They have Alan Brandt to play the nose. Speaking of Alan Branch, you guys don't have Vince Wilfork for the first time in almost over a decade. So you already mentioned that you're not going to be able to stop pass. Are you concerned about stopping the run?
Yes, I am. You know, so if I'm running the draft board, my biggest need is actually, you know, guard. You know, so it was a need last year. We barely scraped by, and we're weaker now than we were then. It's a problem if, you know, everything we've talked about with the Patriots today has mostly been around Tom Brady. It's a problem if he can't go into a three-step drop without getting hit. So shoring up the interior of the offensive line is the biggest problem. But right on the heels of that is defensive tackle. We did draft a D tackle in the first round last year. He kind of got a red shirt year this year. He only, like, maybe he was out there for a dozen plays early in the season, and they put him on IR. And that's great and everything, but he's a penetrator, and what we really need is a big, fat two-gapper that can just try and control the line of scrimmage and free up our linebackers, you know, who have some speed and power that, you know, we'd like them to be able to close in on. We don't have Wilfork, which means – and we don't have the Wilfork-type player. We have other big, fat guys that have played. You know, they played last year. They played the year before. You know, Silver Salinga is probably going to end up starting in this place unless they go out and pull the trigger in the first or second round on a legitimate defensive tackle. Even then, that guy's probably still, you know, not going to start over an experienced starter. But, yeah, the lack of beef on the defensive front is a concern of mine. Yeah, on both, I think Dave was talking earlier about how, you know, football is won and lost in the trenches, and I agree, especially when you're in the ball control game like the Patriots do on both offense and defense. It's going to be hard to do that without Wilfork.
Dave, so Patrick was just talking about the holes on his team. What's the biggest hole on the Dolphins that you would like to see filled during draft season?
Right now, it's got to be guard, just like the Patriots. We've got Billy Turner, who was drafted last year, but he came in as a tackle, so he spent the year converting over. And the other guy we have is Dallas Thomas, who is they've been trying him at tackle, and he's shown he can't hold up there. He's moved inside a few times, and it hasn't really worked out with him. He's a former third-round pick, I believe, out of Tennessee. But behind that, we've got pretty much nothing. So definitely guard. I don't know that they would go there at pick number 14, but I would expect them to find a veteran after the draft, kind of like what they did with Darren College last year, and maybe address it in the mid rounds. The problem is we don't have a third round pick this year. I don't know. Maybe we trade back out of the first round. Maybe try to pick up that third round and try to fill in some gaps that way.
It really must be nice for you guys to have guard be the biggest need on your team, right? I'm looking at my roster right now for the Jets. I mean, and I'm just staring at Geno Smith at my quarterback spot, and
yeah.
I'm just absolutely thrilled that we beat the Dolphins in week 17 last year, so that we moved from the second pick down to the sixth pick. You know, I mean, like, it's not like the Jets could use Phillip Rivers or anything playing quarterback. I don't think Phillip Rivers would be a good fit with the Jets at all. I don't think winning playoff games and possibly contending with the Patriots for Super Bowls, I don't think that's what I think a week 17 over the Dolphins, I think that's a bigger win for us.
You know, I've always loved Phillip Rivers, but you are out of your mind if you chose a second overall pick for a 35-year-old quarterback.
Right, but you look at what the Jets are doing. I mean, I'm not saying I would do it, but if you look what the Jets are doing, the Jets are going for it. They're going for it right now, and they don't have the quarterback. But what they can do, I mean, hopefully they think Mariota falls to number six, but it doesn't look like that's going to happen. So instead of just losing that Week 17 game, if they're going to try to get Mariota, they're going to have to give up other assets to move up to number two, take him. And I don't think I would do that. I would just ride with and see if Geno could improve with better talent around him. I mean, they filled their two biggest roster holes at receiver and in the secondary. I mean, they still have problems. I mean, I know I made fun of you guys for saying guard was your biggest need, but like I'd probably say guard is the Jets' biggest need too at this point. And they could use a pass rusher too. But besides that, it seems like the Jets have really done a good job this offseason at picking up guys. I mean, what's your guys' opinion on what the Jets have done this offseason?
Well, the elephant in the room is that they don't have a quarterback, so it's not going to matter. I think we all know that. I'm curious about Cromartie. Can he still play at all? Like they're putting the band back together, you know, from like 2007. That was a long time ago. Like, I know Revis can still
play. Yeah, I understand.
Play,
I understand what you're saying.
Yeah. Like, is that, like, have you looked into this? Do you know? But I don't know. I haven't watched that play in like 10 years.
He played well last year at the beginning of the year, and then he sort of slowed down a bit. But he was a good cornerback. Like, he's a huge upgrade on what we had. The issue I have is that he was available last offseason. And I mentioned this on the podcast a couple of weeks ago. Darrell Revis was available last offseason. Antonio Cromartie was available last offseason. The Jets decided not to get either of them. Cromartie was willing to come back for a one-year, $3 million deal. That's how much he got in Arizona. And John Idzik decided, no, I don't want him. And we're gonna go with D. Milner. We're going to go with Dimitri Patterson as our cornerbacks. And Cromartie played well on a one-year, $3 million contract. Idzik got fired. And now we signed Cromartie to a four-year, $32 million contract. So it's just not good management. But I can't complain that we brought back those two corners, because now, I mean, the secondary isn't like anything that I'm not really worried about it, considering we have arguably the best corner in the league, and then we have Cromartie, and we picked up Marcus Gilchrist from San Diego.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, I'm not a humongous fan of his, but what it allows us to do, it allows us to move Calvin Pryor, our first round pick from Louisville last year, into
the box type of role.
I like him too, but the Jets had him playing the last line of defense last year, and that's not his game. So without looking at the secondary, forget the secondary even. Like the rest of the roster, does it scare you at all, or are you still same old Jets?
Sheldon scares me. He's probably, with all due respect to Sue, I think he might be the best defensive tackle in the league. Like he's really, really good. Your defense is good top to bottom. Like the problem is on the offensive side of the ball, where like you just don't have much of anything. Right? Like you know this, right? like I don't need to insult you, but you have my old running back who's actually pretty good, but you know, running back. He's good. He's good. I gave you some grief the other day that he's going to break Mark Sanchez's franchise record for fumbles in a season, which is 12. A lot. But the most Ridley's ever had is 4, right? So I think the reputation for his fumbles is way worse than the truth of it actually is. And he's a hard runner. He moves forward. He does dance in the box a little bit, but for the most part, like you're going to get positive yards from him. He's a good back. That's a good pickup for you. But yeah, if you don't have guards, it's not going to help you a ton. And if you don't have a quarterback, then none of it matters anyway. You know, so your two deep threat, tall wide receivers and your tall, fast, you know, tight end with a real bad criminal record. I'm not sure how good they actually do you without you know, your guards and your QB being legitimate options or legitimate players.
All right. So you mentioned Stephen Ridley, that he was on the Patriots last year, and now he's a New York Jet. So I was looking around. I was just looking at the offseason, and just something just, like, popped into my mind that, like, just seemed interesting to me, that it just seems that in this division, there seems to be a lot of incest going on. I mean, I'm not talking Game of Thrones here. I'm talking, like, just players, coaches, executives, moving from one team to another. Here's just a quick rundown of just this offseason of either players, executives, or coaches moving from one team to another team within a division. Rex
Ryan,
former coach.
This is less incest, more foot fetish, is what you're saying.
Oh, wow.
Sorry, sit me down for a game. That's okay.
We've gone butt fumble. We've gone foot fetish. Oh my God. Okay, back serious talk. Back we got Rex Ryan, going from the Jets to the Bills. Mike Tannenbaum going from the Jets to the Dolphins. Darrelle Revis from the Jets to the Patriots. Back to the Jets. Steve Ridley, as I just mentioned, former Patriot, now stud running back for the New York Jets, will not break Mark Sanchez's fumble record. Then we have Charles Clay, as we mentioned before, moved from the Dolphins to the Bills. Scott Chandler, who somehow just that's one of the guys that, like, I don't understand. Like, the Jets could just never cover that guy, just scoring touchdowns back and forth every game. Is now a New England Patriot. So he'll
who also could never cover him.
Yeah. I still don't get it. Percy Harvin is now a Buffalo Bill. The New York Jets offensive coordinator is Chan Gailey. And, I love that move, but he was the coach for the Bills, I believe, 2 years ago. Richie Incognito is going to be bullying people in the Buffalo the Buffalo Bills locker room now. And Brandon Gibson is a New England Patriot. So this is just from this offseason.
Mm-hmm.
There are a bunch of players from past off seasons, whether it be Brandon Spikes, Wes Welker, Rob Ninkovich, Danny Woodhead. What is going on, guys? Like, I did some research and I looked around, and no division comes close to what is going on here. So can you guys think of any reasons this is happening in this specific division?
Proximity, maybe. You know, these markets pay more than other markets too, although I don't know how true that really is, but it seems to be like you're going to make more money in New York and Boston and Miami than you will in, you know, Oakland.
Buffalo.
Or I left them off the list. Yeah. They,
yeah.
They're funny. Like they draft great players and they just can't keep them. Like, what a juggernaut they would be if they could ever re-sign one of their free agents. But yeah. Oh, and you left off the granddaddy of them all in terms of the incest, which was, you know, Bill Belichick going from the defensive coordinator of the Patriots to the defensive coordinator of the Jets to the head coach of the Jets to the head coach of the Patriots.
that never happened, ever. I've blocked that out of my mind. That never happened.
I'm going to try and buy the napkin that he resigned on at some point in my life.
Oh, my God.
It.
Oh, my God. I'll use it to wipe my tears.
Yeah, there you go.
Yeah, I mean, maybe so you bring up Belichick, right? So maybe it's sort of like these owners. I mean, we've seen it. We've seen it with just this past offseason with Robert Kraft and Woody Johnson with this whole tampering nonsense going back and forth with Darrelle Revis. Maybe it's just like a head games that they're playing with each other or something. Like, because, like, I obviously, like, it's not the number one reason these guys are moving to these teams. Like, they're moving because they're good at their jobs. Like, whether it be coach or in front office or on the field, but something has to be going on because it's gotten to a point where every time I look up, I see someone else being signed from another team, and I'm just like playing musical chairs. So, Dave, can you think of any reason, or do you think it's just a coincidence?
I have to say it's a coincidence. A lot of fans seem to think that every time the Patriots sign someone from the Dolphins, that they're downloading their whole playbook every time someone goes that way. But I don't buy that. But I don't know. I can't really explain it. It is a bizarre thing. It just seems like it happens all too often.
Yeah, I don't get it. Well, I'll tell you this much. I'm not moving to Buffalo anytime soon, and I don't think either of you guys are going to be moving anywhere anytime soon. So we're gonna be back on Saturday. Pod Vader, Jay Soderberg is going to have another group of super fans. You guys could once again hit us up on Twitter at NFU Podcast. That is at NFU Podcast. You could email us at nextfanup@gmail.com. And get us on Facebook, Facebook.com/NFU Podcast. Patrick, is there any other parting shots you want to throw my way? I mean, you've already gotten the butt fumble and Belichick out of the way. Is there something else you want to send me to bed with while I have nightmares of just, or even dreams of hopefully one day the Jets raising that trophy that you guys seem to raise every freaking year?
Well, that actually, yeah, it's not really a shot. It's a question. I've never really been able to get the straight answer on it. And you might know because you're a Jets fan. So the last time the Jets won the Lombardi Trophy or won the Super Bowl was in 1969, right? So the league merger happened the next year. So does that mean that the previous three Super Bowls, were those exhibition games? No, I'm serious. I'm serious. Because the NFL championship couldn't have been the Super Bowl because the league hadn't been unified yet, right? So if that's the case, does that mean that the Jets have never actually won a championship?
I'm not entertaining your nonsense, Patrick. I've done it enough for the past hour. We have a Super Bowl. It's in the record books. It's probably the most famous Super Bowl win in NFL history. And to me, it's worth five.
Numbers say it differently.
To me, it's worth five Super Bowls. So we have one more Super Bowl than you, even though I wasn't born until 23 years later. But it counts all the same. Dave, how about you say something to Patrick and defend me? I mean, this is ridiculous. I'm sick of the Patriots already. I mean, I said this wasn't going to be Patriots today, but it seemed like we did talk a lot of Patriots. So even when I try not to, I still talk Patriots.
Yeah, we can't escape it, can we?
No, we can't. Well, I'm going to try to escape this way because it's the only way I could get it out of my mind. So we'll see you guys on Saturday. It was great. Hopefully you guys download, listen, leave us a review on iTunes. That always helps. So we will see you soon, and thanks for listening. Have a good night, guys.
All right. Good night.
Good night, guys.